Welcome to another episode of the Deborah Health Report, where we dive into current health and medical topics to keep the Delaware Valley informed and updated. Last month, we discussed the current state of heart valve repair and replacement and the exciting developments on the way. This month, we focus on heart failure breakthroughs. Here's Rasa Kay.
Hi, I'm Rasa Kay. Cardiac disease of any kind can lead to heart failure when the heart gets burdened or weakened to the point where it can't properly do its job of pumping blood throughout the body. With so many potential roads to heart failure, it's no wonder medical science has been putting massive resources toward treatments for this increasingly prevalent condition. This year, leading cardiovascular organizations around the world together issued a more precise framework that refines how heart failure is identified and classified. It emphasizes catching it as early as possible and treating it as a dynamic condition that can change and be changed over time. Deborah cardiologist Dr. Jauris Rojas-Marte talked with me about all these updates and what's in the pipeline for heart failure treatment. We're seeing breakthroughs, and we're on the brink of more.
Heart failure is it's a misnomer. But someone who has heart failure doesn't mean that their heart actually stopped working. What that refers to is to the inability of the heart to pump efficiently, or doing so at the expense of high pressure inside of the heart. That high pressure causes symptoms such as shortness of breath, or fatigue, fluid buildup. So it's a condition where the heart is unable to do its job properly. We need to help the patient with the medications and lifestyle changes to prevent the problem from getting worse over time.
What burdens a heart over time? And what is that progression like? Is it sudden, like a pack on your back? Or is it a gradual thing that you suddenly realize something is going on?
It can actually be both, not at the same time, obviously, but depending on the condition that leads to heart failure. And by the way, almost all types of heart diseases end up in heart failure if left untreated over time. Heart failure is the end result of all cardiac or almost all cardiac diseases. So depending on what causes the heart failure, the onset can be the sudden. For example, a patient who gets or who has a massive heart attack, or someone who has a hypertensive crisis, meaning the blood pressure goes up to 200, they can develop acute sudden heart failure. But most of the cases happened over the course of months or years, actually, more commonly. Patients who have high blood pressure for a long time and it's not well controlled, diabetes, high cholesterol, prior heart attacks that maybe were not massive. Over time, these patients develop congestive heart failure. So it can happen suddenly or insidiously over time.
So obviously you want to take care of your heart to prevent these diseases that can lead to heart failure. So there's the prevention and all of the lifestyle stuff that we should be doing for a healthy heart.
Yes.
Okay, halting the progress of heart failure once you pick up on it. I mean, basically, that's one of the goals of treatment, correct?
To
stop it in its tracks.
Yes. So using the medications, using device interventions when needed, lifestyle changes, we can prevent the heart failure from progressing. The natural history, the natural course of this condition is to get worse over time. So with these medications, we prevent that from happening. And by doing so, we can improve the patient's quality of life and many times their longevity, how long they live. Otherwise, the disease just takes its course and eventually the patients become symptomatic and eventually die with the condition. It could be in a matter of months, years, decades sometimes, depending on the severity, the cause of it, and how well treated the heart failure condition is.
So we've got the prevention, we've got the stopping it in its tracks and keeping it at a certain point and not letting it get worse. But okay, so can we take it back? Can we reverse it?
In some cases, especially with the medications we have available now, we can reverse the course of heart failure. In some occasions, even cure some types associated with, let's say, the transient the insult. But most of the times, patients will have heart failure, even if we can reverse most of the changes, which is the most significant change that could happen as a response to intervention. Even in those cases, someone who had heart failure will always, almost always, I should say, be considered to be a heart failure patient. But their quality of life can go back to very close to a normal individual. For the most part, we don't consider a patient to be fully cured. That can happen very rarely. So we continue the follow-up and the monitoring in someone who, anyone who has had heart failure or has been treated for heart failure.
So there are three types of heart failure. Could you explain each one and how they affect the heart?
Based on one calculation, one number, it's called ejection fraction, which is the percentage of blood that is pumped by the heart with each beat. It's roughly 60%, about 50% is considered normal. Using that number as a reference, we classified heart failure into HFrEF or HFrEF, which is when the ejection fraction is lower than 40%. Or HFpEF, HFpEF, when the ejection fraction is higher than 50%. And then the range in between 40 to 50%, we call that heart failure with mid-range ejection fraction. What that means is that the individual is either getting better, the ejection fraction is lower than 40%, now it's getting better, so let's say it's 45%, or it's getting worse. So it's that like an in-between period. So that number is important because based on the classification, we have different approaches to management. The strongest evidence we have is for those patients who have HFrEF or heart failure with reduced ejection fraction. We have the four pillars of management, which is four groups of medications that we use to improve their quality of life, the longevity. Patients who have HFpEF don't have the benefit of getting these medications or getting the benefits in the same way that patients with HFpEF get, but we can still use them for improvement in quality of life. And the main focus for those patients is to treat the underlying conditions that led to the development of heart failure, diabetes, obesity, high blood pressure, high cholesterol, etc.
So systolic and diastolic, that's systolic is when the ejection fraction is too low?
Yes. We don't use the terms systolic and diastolic anymore. The terms I mentioned before, HFrEF and HFpEF, replaced those terms. So the previously label of a systolic heart failure is now replaced with HFrEF, or heart failure with reduced ejection fraction. And HFpEF, or diastolic heart failure, formerly, it's what we use these days. The reason for that is patients who have HFrEF, or heart failure with systolic, or the reduced ejection fraction, they have both systolic and diastolic heart failure. So it's not that they only have systolic heart failure, and the ones who have HFpEF only have diastolic heart failure. They have, the ones with HFrEF have both. This is more of a structural classification. It's more precise in terms of the type of abnormalities that happen inside of a heart.
Does the new language reflect a clearer understanding, more information, or something that evolves in your treatment world?
It's just a more accurate classification based on structural changes in the heart, or specifically on the ejection fraction, and knowing that the studies have shown the benefits in patients with a low ejection fraction, and those who have a preserved ejection fraction haven't had those benefits, and also the fact that, as I said before, someone who has HFrEF also has diastolic heart failure. So it's not entirely accurate to say systolic heart failure. There was another term that people used to use, which is systolic and diastolic heart failure. So that's a little bit confusing to refer to those who have low ejection fraction to say systolic and diastolic heart failure, and then only diastolic for those who have a preserved ejection fraction. So it's more precise. And I think easier to just say heart failure with reduced or preserved ejection fraction.
All right, folks, just learn that now. HFrEF or HFpEF. when we're talking about heart
yes.
failure.
Yeah.
And mid-range is that sweet
in
spot
between.
In the middle. Well, maybe not a sweet spot, but in the middle. All right, so then medication is the first line of treatment for heart failure. Anything new in that area?
Yeah, there are medicines common to the therapies we have available for heart failure. In terms of HFrEF or heart failure with reduced ejection fraction, we have four pillars, four classes of medications that we use, and each one of those group of medicines have shown to improve quality of life and longevity in patients who have this type of heart failure. The newest addition to this regimen are the medications from the group of the dapagliflozin and empagliflozin, which were initially developed for diabetes and then were found to have a benefit in patients with heart failure. Other newer therapies available are GLP-1 agonists, which are medications developed for weight loss in obese patients. So now we know that patients who have HFpEF, which is a typical type of heart failure associated with obesity, by managing the obesity and helping the patients with weight loss, the heart failure associated with it can also get better. And patients can have fewer hospitalizations for heart failure and improve the quality of life and symptoms. It's very exciting. We're still learning. There is more research in the pipeline with those medications and heart failure patients. So we're hopeful to see what's coming.
How's GLP-1s, man? Every day there's new and better news about it.
Yes, yes.
Now there's devices then. If the medication has run its course in terms of effectiveness, or are there side effects that that become intolerable? When do you put in a device? And then we'll talk about the devices.
Yeah, excellent. So that's a great question. So the first approach is the medications. The expectation is that patients feel better, can have a normal or as normal as possible of a quality of life and prevent the fluid buildup. The fatigue, et cetera. When patients remain symptomatic, when they still have significant shortness of breath related to the heart failure, or they are intolerant, sometimes that happens that they can't take some of these medications, they have an allergic reaction or have some other medical conditions that prevents them from being on these medicines, we consider devices in this type of scenarios.
We've got LVADs, and we did talk about Barostim at one point, and now there's a new pacing system. So let's break down how these all work. Start with an LVAD, because, boy, we've been talking about them for a while. That's been kind of the gold standard for some years.
Yes, so LVAD is it's a gold standard, as you said, along with a heart transplant for patients who have end-stage or advanced heart failure. These are patients who have been on all these medications, or we have tried them many times. They have been on living with heart failure for years. They've had multiple other interventions, devices, you name them, and they've had them all, and they're still symptomatic. They're still very limited to the point that they can't function. So once someone gets to that point, then we consider advanced interventions such as an LVAD or heart transplant. So an LVAD stands for left ventricular assist device. It's a long-term durable device that patients get to alter the prognosis of these patients. Usually someone with advanced heart failure has a life expectancy of approximately median life expectancy of 6 to 12 months. With an LVAD, we can affect that and improve their quality of life, the survival. Survival with an LVAD is the median survival is approximately 7 years. So that's a significant improvement. An LVAD could be used instead of a heart transplant, or it could be as a bridge or as a first step to then get the patient listed for transplant. There are different types of approaches. It's important to get patients on time when they have advanced heart failure, because if they have end organ damage, if the kidneys, the liver are significantly affected because of the longstanding deficit from the heart, they might be not candidates for an LVAD or a transplant even. Or even if they're candidates, the risk associated with these procedures can increase, because if now we have to deal with the heart and the kidneys, or the heart and the liver, or physical deconditioning, they are malnourished, for example, it makes a huge difference in terms of how well they do after the procedure. So it's important to detect or diagnose the disease early enough and intervene to get the best outcomes.
Okay, so Barostim, same kind of parameters? And again, the timing question.
Yes, so Barostim is for patients who are less sick as those who require an LVAD. It's an intervention that we use in those who are at a pre-advanced heart failure stage, if you will. The device consists of a stimulator that goes in the neck. It's implanted via a minimally invasive incision. So the device sends signals. It works on the blood pressure receptors in the neck. By stimulating these receptors, it makes it easier for the heart to pump blood. And that can translate into improvement in the short breathing, quality of life. This is the purpose of the device.
And now we have the new WISE pacing system. Explain WISE. WISE me up.
Yeah, so this is a very innovative device. The first leadless device approved by the FDA for CRT therapy. Patients who have a heart rhythm that's out of sync, usually we see abnormalities on the EKG aside from heart failure, and that can cause a worsening of a heart failure. So with this device, which is implanted by an electrophysiologist or an EP doctor, the heart improves. It can work better, more in sync, and that can translate into improvement in the heart function. This is a particular progress in patients who are the candidates for CRT, but their anatomy makes them poor candidates for this, because the CRT therapy we use nowadays requires the insertion of wires, three different wires in the heart. And not everybody qualifies for that, or their anatomy basically is not suitable to implant this successfully and have good outcomes. So this new device ensures the success of the therapy. Here at the border, we implanted the first device just about a month ago. The initial results were very promising. So we're hoping that with this new technology, we will be able to help those patients that were not able to obtain these type of therapies before.
That's cardiologist Dr. Jaurice Rojas Marte on just some of the new treatments for heart failure at Debora. Join us for the next podcast when we talk about a clinical trial at Debora that might be a good fit for you or someone you care about. Find it here the first Wednesday of the month. I'm Rasa Kay.
You can always listen to all of the informative Debora doctor interviews at DeboraHealthReport.com. Schedule an appointment at demanddebora.org.